I'm not in Alabama and Brooke's not in Delaware.
No.
So we're doing this remotely. So I can literally hear a slight echo on my end and I don't know how to fix it. So I'm so sorry, guys, if you hear my voice double the time. I'm Ashley.
I'm Brooke.
And you're here with us on Teachers Who Talk Crime.
Oh, yes. I like it podcast.
Not I like it podcast.
I forgot my part.
She said, oh, yeah, I like it Picasso.
Picasso. Yes. This is episode
9.
This is episode 9. It's been a long day.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, seis, siete, ocho, nueve. Episode nueve.
Nine.
Yeah.
That's all I got. That's all I got today. Business meeting real quick. I feel like editing takes way more work than what I'm doing over here. So I just want to say thank you for all the editing that you do. And hopefully one day I learn how to do such
thanks.
Editing.
Well, thank you for handling all our social medias because I can't.
I have been blowing those Facebook groups up.
As you like, should.
Every single time somebody posts, even if I don't even like drop our link, I'm like commenting so like my name gets out there, you know?
Yes.
Like they see it over and over and then eventually like they're going to be like, yeah.
That is so smart. Have you checked our stats today?
I did earlier. I have not at the moment. I haven't since I got home. But
hold on.
You know what, though? You know what?
What?
We just celebrated our 1 month podcast-iversary.
We did. It's our anniversary.
Hey.
Made for you and me.
Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary to you.
To us.
To us. To us. So, yeah. And in light of that, we're doing a giveaway.
We are. You're getting things.
A big giveaway. We did our first giveaway back a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. and we had a winner, and
yes,
she got a shirt, and she got a handwritten letter from us. Yes.
So precious.
So it was. So we're going to do an even bigger giveaway. Who are we partnering with? Your favorite person.
My favorite person who fuels my caffeine addiction, Silver Linings Lessons.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying not to scream because I can hear the echo.
Yeah. And we're partnering with Mary.
Mary.
Yeah, that was her shout out. She's going to do the merch, not merch because y'all aren't buying anything if you win. We're giving it to you. But she's doing like the apparel stuff because she's crafty like that.
Yeah, so definitely head over to our IG for more information and also to follow us. And that is at Teachers Talk Crime.
And our TikToks, mine is southern.math.teacher.
And mine, you already know, it's Branny. That is Brant. With 3 Y's and an underscore.
Don't forget the underscore.
At this point, if you guys forget it, are you even true Teachers Talk Crimes listeners?
Exactly. We also have a Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you for the people that have already purchased coffee for us / loaded teas, because that's our real addiction, as you know.
Seriously.
And it is. Like, we just had a whole conversation before we started recording about loaded tea.
Yeah, and you guys can see on our story, I literally post mine every day.
You have a whole station in your classroom.
I do. It's pretty dope. I'm very proud
of it.
It's
so cute.
It's my little baby.
It is. But our Buy Me a Coffee is buymeacoffee.com/TTC podcast. And also email us. Email us the teacher things, teacher stories. Did a teacher help you? Did a teacher make you mad? Do you have a crazy student story? Did you get fired from using a curse word on TikTok? what are your teacher stories? That one was a little personal. I didn't get fired, but I have been talked to about it. So let us know all your teacher stuff. We want to feature those on Happy Hours episodes. We want to read some of those stories, anything that can be related to the niche of teaching.
Yes, because our inboxes are really dry right now. Super dry.
Crusty, dusty, dry.
And that is Teachers Talk Crime Podcast at gmail.com.
Yes, it is. It is. Mm-hmm. It is. Ashley.
Yes.
You bringing us the case today.
I am. And this case, it's actually kind of sad. All of our cases are pretty sad, but this one made me more sad than any of the other ones I've done.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'm going to tell you a funny story real quick. Please. I was at the gym today to lighten the mood. I was at the gym today, and this sweet girl named Hannah, she's a few years younger than me, and she got done working out, and she was sitting there, and I walked up. I was like, okay, bye, Hannah. Like, see you tomorrow. Like, we speak at the gym. She was like, hey, your podcast. I was like, yeah, did you listen? And she was like, well, I have a question. I was like, okay. And she goes, is it about math? And I was like, no. I was like, it's not about math. And she's like, well, you're a math teacher. I was really confused when you said you started a podcast. I was like, is anybody going to listen to a podcast about math? And I was like, I wouldn't even listen to a podcast about math.
Seriously.
She was so serious, too. She was like, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but like, is it about math?
Brooke, did you not tell her the name of our podcast?
I did, but then you got to think, I've also said our name before, and somebody has thought that I said Teachers Talk Crap.
C-R-A-P. That would be a heck of a podcast, I tell you. These episodes would be 3 hours long.
Exactly. So I don't know if I'm not enunciating or if people are just taking it and going with whatever they want to go with, but apparently we have a podcast called Teachers Talk Crap, and we have a podcast about math.
Cool. So, that's interesting. That's new.
It is. Yeah. Cool. Well, let's just get into it because we are neither one of those things, neither one of those things. And this is Teachers Talk Crime. So sit down, shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Ahora. Y'all already know what that means now. What?
We don't talk about Bruno. No. What? Was that good?
That was great.
What up, y'all? Welcome back. It's Teachers Talk Crime, and y'all already know what it is. We about to be in here talk about murder, suicide, dating violence, domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. So, y'all already know what it is. Don't sit here and act like y'all don't. We about to get into it. So, if you're not ready, I'm going to need you to leave. All right, then.
So today I'm bringing you guys the case of Tia Wimberly. And before I start with my case, I just wanted to give a shout out to Sisters Who Kill. They're a brand new podcast that I just started listening to. My friend Matez actually recommended them to me. So shout out to Matez and shout out to Sisters Who Kill. I had no idea about this case until I started listening to them. So definitely go listen to their episode on this case to get their take on it. I just want to give a fair warning. Their episodes do contain explicit language. So if you're not about that life, like, don't do it.
It's okay. Yeah.
But you know, everybody likes a little curse word sometimes.
It's like that TikTok. What's your favorite curse word? No, what's the TikTok sound?
Something about, I curse a little.
Oh, really? What's your favorite curse word? And then, and then it's a very bad word.
I saw a teacher actually use that sound, and either she put her voice in or someone else edited it and they said frig.
Oh, that's funny. I would have used that.
It's so adorable. I think I saved it. I'll send it to you.
Okay.
Anyways. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tangent. So sorry, guys. So I do have to say that this is the first case that I've ever done that I've genuinely felt sorry, not only for the victim, but for the guilty party as well. And I'm not going to disclose why now. You will see later on.
Oh, guilty for both parties. Okay, yeah. I'm interested to hear about this.
Yeah, I just genuinely feel bad for her. It just, it sucks. It really does. So our case is going to begin on November 11th, 2008. 15-year-old Tia Wimberly was texting a few of her friends in different texting threads, and she was telling them that she wanted to kill herself and things of that nature. Sources don't disclose what their responses were to these text messages, but I would assume that they were trying to convince her not to do it. So some of the text messages that were sent said, "Tomorrow I will shoot myself in the heart." I'm not sure when her thoughts of suicides changed, but then she talked about harming another person. So at first, all her texts were directed just for her. I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to do all these things to myself. And then she started talking about harming another person. So she texted her friends things such as, "I'm going to shoot somebody. I just might get arrested tomorrow. You going to come visit me in jail. And I'm going to bust a cap in somebody." So her,
this is snowballing really quick.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's snowballing rather quickly. So her anger and rage was directed to one person in particular, and that person was Amanda Collette. You see, Amanda and Tia had been friends since elementary school and were currently in their sophomore year at Dillard High School in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And immediately when I saw this, I was like, oh, my God, my sister lives in Fort Lauderdale, so she probably knows all of the places I'm going to talk about. In this episode.
That's so creepy.
Yes. So shout out to Stephanie, if you're listening. My sister doesn't do true crime, but she did listen to our last episode. So shout out to Steph for listening. Pew, 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 pew.
No. Pew, 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 pew. Go Steph. Go Steph. Ooh, ooh.
Hey, go Steph. So Amanda was the star on Dillard's hip hop dance team and was pretty popular with her peers. My bad. It's not said when exactly, at some point Tia realized that she was attracted to females, and she began to develop these romantic feelings for Amanda. So when she expressed those feelings to Amanda, she was turned down. And it's not confirmed if this led to Amanda severing communication with Tia, but on September 30th, 2008, which was Tia's 15th birthday, she did just that. So she not only lost her childhood friend, but she lost her childhood friend that rejected her on her birthday.
That's really hard for a teenager, though. Like, you don't know how they're going to react. You know, I don't know that there's any right or wrong way. Like, if she didn't reciprocate those, she might have felt that now the relationship is tarnished. We have to cut ties. Like, I don't know what else to do. And Tia felt, like you said, rejected. She's now angry. Mm. So it's like, how do you go about that? Because Tia can't help that she has now found her sexuality, and good for her. You found out who you were. That's awesome. But you can't expect it to be reciprocated by everyone, especially at those teen years.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't know, like, Amanda was the star of a hip hop dance team. Like, she was really popular. So maybe, I don't know if she maybe didn't want to feel the same thing because of her popularity. I don't know, but that could also come into play too, you know?
Yeah, it could.
Mm-hmm. So obviously Tia was not happy with it at all, and she became very depressed. She continually tried to contact Amanda, but Amanda was just not having it. All to say this is why Tia had so much anger towards Amanda when she was texting her friends on November 11th. Okay. So Tia even texted Amanda that night as well. So she went back and forth between telling her how much she loved her to telling her how much she hated her. It was very, like, chaotic.
Very teenager.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hate you. I love you. I hate you. I love you. Don't ever talk to me. Oh, I need you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of how I imagined it went. So a friend of Amanda's was on the phone with her that night and confirmed that that Amanda had told her that she was getting texts from Tia. But it's unclear if Amanda even responded to these messages. So Tia, being full of sadness and feelings of rejection, resorted to slashing her arms with a razor a total of 90 times to ease the pain.
Oh, my God.
90 times. So she texted her friend Markel. I want to say it's Markel. Yeah, Markel. Markel. Markel Blackshire, and told him that she was cutting herself. And she also said, "I can't take the pain, and it's about time someone else feels it with me. You'll see what I mean tomorrow."
Spiraling quickly.
Mm-hmm. So the next day, on November 12th, Tia took a .22 caliber semi-automatic that she found under the couch in her house and headed to Dillard.
Why she got a gun under her couch?
Literally, my next question. Why are guns just chilling underneath couches?
Oh my, yeah. No.
Like, where's the lockbox?
We have guns in Alabama, but we, exactly what I was about to say. You took the words right out of my mouth. We have guns down here. James has several guns, but they are all in holsters, in lockboxes, on safety. Like,
yeah.
They're not just under our couch hanging out.
Yeah. You don't just leave something out, especially, you know, around a child. It could get into the wrong hands, and obviously it did. So friends said that Amanda had a feeling that something bad was going to happen that day and that she was essentially rushing them. She was asking them to hurry up, but sources didn't disclose why she thought that. And I'm wondering if maybe Tia had said something to her in the text messages to make her feel this way. But again, I can't confirm because I couldn't find anything on it.
Yeah, her gut feeling, or she just had a hint.
Yeah, sometimes you just like, have that feeling.
Right, and it could have been something so minor, like one of the texts could have said, you're going to feel this too. You know, and she read into that, got a gut feeling. You never know.
Yeah. So in science class, Tia showed Markel, that was a friend that she was texting the night before, the gun, and told him, Amanda's going to get it today. I'm tired of it. I'm trying to talk to her, and she won't listen to me, and I'm sick of it.
See something, say something.
Yeah.
See something, say something.
But I will say that one of my sources said that that a student, and I'm assuming that it was Markel, went to notify the teacher about the gun and Tia's intentions, but was told to sit down.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
But it was one source, so I don't know if this is true. However,
well, then let's say hypothetically it is true. You, again, like you've said in previous episodes, you're a mandated reporter.
Yeah. So the teacher claims that he was never told about the gun. And like you said, from a teacher's perspective, like, we are mandated reporters. This is something that we have to do. But also, I know my kids come up and tell me a bunch of nonsense throughout the day. And I'm like, go and sit down, go and sit down. But the minute the word gun exits their mouth, like, if it were to exit their mouth, there's no way I would be like, go sit down. So I have a hard time believing that this happened.
Right. Exactly.
Just because we're in the profession that we're literally in it, and we wouldn't take something like this lightly, especially with like school shootings that are going on and everything of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And we have I have eighth graders, so they love to come like tell me the gossip and the tea.
Mm-hmm.
And, do you want to hear the gossip of the day? And I'm like, well, just keep in mind, I'm a mandated reporter. So tell me what you want, but keep that in mind.
I literally had to do that today. One of my kids came up to me and said, Miss Brandt, can I tell you a secret? I said, you can. However, if it's something serious, I'm going to have to go tell somebody. She was like, no, no, no. I have a crush on someone. And I was like, okay, spill the tea, girl.
Yeah, tell me all the things.
Yeah, tell me who you got a crush on, even though you need to have a crush on these books. But cool.
Right.
Anywho, yeah. So class ends, and it's time to transition to the next class. So Tia, who still has the gun in her possession, approached Amanda, and some sort of altercation occurred. So Amanda turned to walk away from Tia, and an eyewitness said that they heard Tia say, so you thought I was playing with you, huh? Before taking out the gun and shooting Amanda once in the back.
Oh my God. On school.
On school grounds. Yes. So Amanda drops to the floor, and students come to her aid while Tia flees the scene to a fast food restaurant across the street from the school. And it's there that she calls 911 and reported what she had done. So I couldn't get the recording of the 911 call, but I do have parts of the transcript. So on the call, Tia said, I shot my friend at Dillard. That was like my best friend since second grade. I didn't want to kill her, so I shot her in the back. I just wanted to give her the pain she gave me. I need you to send an ambulance because I don't want her to die. I love her so much. I love her more than anything.
So Tia fled the scene and is at a fast food restaurant and is the one that called the cops.
Yes.
Well, probably one of the people that called the cops. I'm sure multiple people.
Oh, absolutely.
Shots were fired.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned that people like came to help Amanda in the hallway after a gun has gone off. Like, this does show you the difference in the progression of the year. So this is 2008.
Yeah.
And now the training on a gun going off in a school building is so different. And those were great friends, and they went to Amanda's aid. But there are so many procedures that go into play now that I don't know that Tia would have even been able to get off of campus had this taken place in current time.
Yeah, but I also feel like she was assisted only because Tia fled. Like, it was like she shot the gun. I'm assuming she shot and she ran. You know what I mean? I feel like people weren't concerned for Tia because she was leaving. They were concerned to try and help Amanda.
Or they, what I meant is that people weren't concerned that they too could also be shot.
Yeah.
Because this wasn't, I'm out to get everybody. This was, I had a target.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So police came and confiscated the gun and arrested Tia for the murder. So while in custody, Tia admitted that she shot Amanda so she would feel pain too. And in December, a Broward County jury denied her insanity plea. Insanity. What is that word I'm saying?
Insanity.
Yikes. Her insanity plea. I mean, I think I'm going insane at this point. And I couldn't find any information as to why it was denied. The prosecutors on the case stated that they wanted to charge her with first-degree murder. I mean, it was planned. She was telling people that she wanted her to feel the pain. And obviously, she brought a gun to school that day with the intentions of doing something with it.
However, premeditated.
Yeah, I thought so. But because of her age, one of my sources also said the family's feelings, Amanda's family's feelings, factored into her being sentenced to second-degree murder. Again, I'm not sure what Amanda's family's feelings were, but I'd be really curious to know how that helped determine a second degree charge rather than a first degree.
Well, so did they try her as an adult or as a minor?
As an adult.
So they did try her as an adult. They must be good people and they must have a lot of Jesus in their heart to, you know, come to the, they're not coming to the aid of Tia, but to lessen the charge.
Yeah.
Down to second degree.
Mm-hmm.
But she got tried it as an adult. I that's what I was wondering the whole time you were saying that. So at what point, my next question is at what point, I guess, during interrogation, she found out that Amanda had actually died? Because when she placed the 911 call, you said that she didn't want her to die. She yep. just shot her. And so at that point, Tia did not know she was dead.
You know, I don't know when that happened, honestly. I would be curious to know if they told her she died and she had like a complete like breakdown and...
Yeah.
Because she sounded really apologetic from the minute, like, it happened. Like, she shot her, and then she ran, and then she called 911 to confess what she had done.
Right, but in her 911 call, she's like, hey, I just want y'all to go help her so that she doesn't die. Like,
yeah.
She genuinely believes that she just injured her.
Yeah.
At this point.
But also, I feel like, also on that 911 call, she said, I didn't want to kill her, so I shot her in the back. Like, there's a lot of things.
Yeah, in the back.
Yeah, there's your spine is back there. You could have paralyzed her. Like, there were, a lot of things could have happened.
I'm not a science teacher, so I have no idea what all is back there, but the spine sounds correct.
Yeah, the spine, I mean, you could shoot through and get through your lungs, the heart, you know, any of your vital organs, really.
So if you really wanted to injure her, why didn't you just shoot her in the leg?
Or in the shoulder.
On the shoulder, the hand.
Yeah. I don't know.
But... You chose a very prominent area of the body that a lot of things could have happened.
Yeah, and it seemed pretty, like, it was just, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, she didn't think about it. She just pulled it out and shot. You know what I mean? It wasn't like she stood there and tried to aim. I feel like she just pulled it out and was like, bop, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And she's a kid, so
How much 15.
Target practice does she really have?
Yeah, she's 15. So Tia was very apologetic in court. She wrote an apology and read it to Amanda's mother, Joyce, in court. And parts of it read, Dear Miss Joyce, I'm so intensely and immensely sorry for what I have done to your amazing daughter, Amanda. And I am so sorry that Amanda had the misfortune of meeting and befriending someone like me. You have no idea how truly sorry I am. I make myself physically sick with disgust. I will never forgive myself for what I have done, and I don't expect you to forgive me.
Her vocabulary shows her intelligence.
Yeah. And, like, some of the other cases we've covered, like, are in court. Like, there was no...
Remorse.
Remorse or anything.
Yeah, no tears, nothing. And if there were tears in other cases that we've covered, it was tears because it was tears for them themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, the murderer was crying for themselves, not the victims. So, I mean, just those words alone, she's already smarter than old Steinke.
Steinke. Yes.
I mean, that just shows her intelligence, which that makes me question a lot of things. Like, okay, I just got to.
Yeah. And just wait till I fill it in. Like, I'm just giving you the crime right now as I normally know. Do, you know?
You do
but
this.
When I fill it in, like, you're going to be like, dang. Like, wow. This is, wow.
Okay.
But I'm almost there, so let me just finish this bar up. So she wrote something to her own family as well, and it read, Mama, Papa, Grandma, I want to apologize for causing you so much grief, so much anger, and being such an embarrassment, disappointment, and disgrace. I am sorry. Aww. Like, yeah. Like, granted, what she did shouldn't have been done.
No. Not at all.
I think
but
it's just
showing remorse.
Yes, and it's just so, because she's literally, like, she said embarrassment, disappointment, and disgrace. Like, oh my gosh, like, that hurts. Like, she is aware of what she has done and feels so bad for it, you know?
Yeah, and that's, like, I guess we, you know, we spoke in another episode about at what point do you decide that someone's reformed? And no, she hasn't even served a day of her sentence, but from other people that have been air quoted reformed versus mm-hmm. what I'm hearing from her and mm-hmm. just all the, you know, all the apologies and how like how empathetic she is and sympathetic and remorseful and just like, I screwed up. Like yeah. she is well aware in mm-hmm. these letters.
She is. So in March of 2010, at the age of 16, excuse me. Whoa.
I'm going to read episode.
Every episode. I don't know why I do this. Nope. Tia Wimberly was sentenced to 25 years in prison. So 25 right, so years.
16, 26, 6, 36, mm-hmm. 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41. She's 41.
Mm-hmm. So she'll be out when she's 41. So there are things that occurred prior to her sentencing that I'm going to mention, but I have to get into the how we got here first because it won't make sense without it. And I am in full believance. I hope that's a word. If not, I just made it up. It's been a long day teaching. Judge me if you want. The sole reason this crime was committed was because of unresolved childhood trauma.
Shocker.
We say this every single episode. Get these babies the help that they not only deserve, but obviously that they need.
Yes.
It's yes. just, oh, and here's where you're going to be like, dang. So Tia had a very rough upbringing. According to court documents, Tia was abandoned by her parents as a baby. Now, when I see abandoned, it's like, oh, I don't want this kid. Goodbye. Right?
Yeah. Like, I think of the movies where they drop the kids off at the fire station.
Yeah. And it wasn't anything like that. So as I continued to research, I learned that Tia's mom, her name was Char Merritt Auckland. I hope I'm saying that right. Joined the U.S. Army after Tia was born. And she left her in the care of Tia's father's parents, Shirley Wimberly and John Wimberly. So again, that doesn't sound like abandonment to me.
Yeah, it sounds like you're serving your country and you were deployed, which you can't help.
Yeah, so I'm not sure where abandonment came into play. And I'm also not sure where Tia's dad was during this time. His name is Javon Wimberly. So Char came back into Tia's life in 2001 when she was 8. And
so
Char
this
had
woman reappears and is like, hey, I'm your mom.
Yeah. And Tia was born in 1993. She came back in 2001. She's 8. So that's years of your child's life that you have missed.
Yeah. The main moments where they learn about the world.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also not sure how close in communication she was to Tia while she was, you know, in the Army.
Okay.
When she came back into Tia's life, Char presented serious mental issues, and I couldn't find what specifically, and was abusive to Tia. So she received physical discipline based on various types of military punishment. I'm not sure what military punishment means, but I do know that the military is pretty rough and tough. So I imagine that this punishment was also rough and tough.
Well, and you said she suffered for some, like, she could have definitely had PTSD. I'm not diagnosing her. I'm not a specialist, but that is what a lot of people that come back, if she was deployed, that's when we were in Iraq. Like,
yeah.
that's when that was happening. So she could definitely have PTSD. She has never been a mother. She's now having to be around an 8-year-old that mm-hmm. doesn't know who she is.
Mm-hmm.
But I would assume that it was PTSD. And like you said, military, I know some military kids and, you know, like they've got, they still believe in like, you know, harsher punishments.
Yeah. Like it may not be like beating, but it's like punishment on a different level. You know what I mean?
Right.
So Tia was molested by a family member at the age of 6. And what breaks my heart truly is that it's just a year older than my twins are currently right now. Mm-hmm. So like, I can't even imagine the trauma that this incident created for her.
Well, and you know, too, I know you and you would be straight mama bear. Like
thank you.
Yeah. You're right.
It's like crazy to even think of that someone would do this. And it happens all of the time. But it's just like, these are babies.
Yeah.
Like, what do you want with a child?
You're stripping them of their innocence.
It's so upsetting. So family is supposed to be the people you can turn to for anything and the people that always have your back. And this family member was never charged, which I absolutely hate and I absolutely don't understand.
I disagree with that, too, just because they're a family member does not mean that they do not deserve to be held. Like, if that happened to the neighbor down the street, you would sit in your living room and you would cast judgment and say, well, they should reprimand them. But then it happens in your own family and you're like, oh, no, because that's so-and-so and, you know, they're part of this family. That's called double standards. And that's where you messed up as the adult in the house and you are setting a role model. You're supposed to be a role model for this child. Who is in that brain development where they're looking to the adults for all of the answers to understand this world.
Yeah. Agreed. It's just, there's no way. If this would have happened to my kids, I don't care who you are. I do not care who you are. You're not doing anything like that to my children. Point blank, period.
And cut.
And period. So, however, Tia did attend months of counseling at a sexual assault treatment center. So kudos to the family for putting her in therapy, but also not kudos to the family for not getting this family member locked up for her reason for going to therapy.
Right.
So Tia had a very intense fear of the dark, and it was so bad that sometimes she couldn't sleep. She had frequent nightmares, and she even wet the bed until she was 12. Now, it's not said that these were in direct relation to the sexual assault that she received, but I imagine that it definitely factored into all of this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we don't know when it took place, how it took place, and a lot of trauma you often hear is the bedwetting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the sexual abuse didn't stop there for Tia. She was raped by an uncle at the age of 12.
Oh,
again,
God.
Another family member, another person whose trust was lost by this youngster.
What is happening in this family?
Seriously. So there was no mention if this family member was charged with his crimes, but going off of what occurred the last time, I would assume that he wasn't.
Well, he needed to be, and I'm sorry, Tia, that happened to you.
Yeah. So Tia's grandparents did take her to a psychologist. However, they discontinued services in late of 2007. So before I continue, I'm going to do a little bit of math. And you guys know that I'm not good at math at all. So bear with me. Tia was born in 1993. 1993 plus 12, which is the year that she was raped, puts us at 2005. Okay?
Okay.
So her grandparents stopped taking her to the psychologist in late 2007, which gives us about 2 years of therapy.
Mm-hmm. Which is good.
It's good, but it's not great. All of the things that Tia has gone through in her lifetime, 2 years is nowhere near enough time to not only talk about your past and your current traumas, but to also work through them.
I also thought that a therapist... Yeah, they have patient doctor privilege, but like, wouldn't they be a mandated reporter as well? As far as like, if Tia is saying, "Well, Uncle Bobby did this to me, and Cousin Richie did this to me," does she not have to report it? I don't know. I'm not in that profession. It's not my.
That I'm not sure of. So if anyone out there listening does know, let us know.
Because I know, like, in my sessions he has to say if anything is disclosed to me that could harm you or someone else, I have to report it. Now, that's my therapist. I don't know if they have the same license and code state to state. I'm just saying, like, that's something he says to me.
Oh.
So, like, I can't go to my session and be like, I murdered James and him not.
Oh, my.
You know, like, I mean, I'm not going to murder James, but, like, I can't walk in there and confide in him that and he say nothing just because of the doctor-patient privilege.
Like, yeah.
He would have to report that.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure.
That would be interesting to know.
Yeah, that would definitely be really interesting. And it's also not stated why her grandparents stopped taking her to her psychologist in the first place. So there's really no explanation why they stopped taking her. But also, it's not enough time for her to work through everything that she's gone through.
She definitely would have been a life longer. That's lifelong trauma that will even come back
to
you when you get your first boyfriend. When you get pregnant, when you get married,
all of those things. So it's not noted when, but at some point Tia's father, Javon, comes back into her life and became her primary caregiver. And one of my sources described her as a daddy's girl. Tia loved her dad. So in 2006, when he was sentenced to 25 years in jail for second degree murder, she was devastated.
Oh my God.
So the both of them were sentenced to 25 years for second degree murder.
So this explains why Dad could have been out of the picture in the beginning. Like he was, you know.
Well, this happened in 2006. So, I mean, Tia was born in 1993. So what's that?
Yeah, I don't know.
What's these numbers? It's a number. Hold on.
But it's a big number. But what I guess what I'm assuming or speculating is that he was involved in things that wouldn't have made him the best father. And I'm totally reaching at this point, but you didn't mention
from what I read, he was a really good dad. From what I read,
and I'm not saying what he did outside the house didn't make him a good dad inside the house. I'm just saying, like, that could have been a reason he wasn't present.
Yeah, because there was really no information as to when Tia was living with his parents, what he was doing. I couldn't find anything like what he was doing at that time.
Yeah.
Not only that, but according to the podcast, Sisters Who Kill, he refused to let her visit him because he didn't want her seeing him behind bars. So this is a year after she was raped by her uncle. She had this amazing relationship with her dad. She loves him. She idolizes him. And she not only loses that person to the prison system, but now she is no longer able to see him at all. So the trauma, the trauma is just piling up against her here. And not to mention, just after a year after he was sentenced was when her grandparents stopped taking her to her psychologist. So these are all fresh wounds. They need to be addressed. Tia needed this for her mental health. And I feel like the only questions I have for her grandparents is why? Why did you stop her from going to get the help that she needed?
Yeah. And also, like, everything that she's gone through is when children experience something like that, they often blame themselves. What did I do wrong for my dad to be taken away? What did I do wrong for my uncle to do that? What did I do wrong for my mom to not be here? What did I do wrong? Like, there's a part of their brain development, and this was on a case that I listened to in another podcast, but, like, that primal age is where they associate good with bad. And, like, when bad things happen at that age, they're like, well, it must have been my fault. This must have been my fault. So I can only imagine we keep saying trauma, but the trauma of her, like, holding all this blame on herself.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. It's very sad, which is why I feel for her. So it's noted that after her father's arrest, Tia became very depressed and the downward spiral really continued at this point. One of my sources stated that Tia showed serious psychological and behavior problems while living with her grandparents. And after everything that I disclosed, I don't blame her for acting out. I really don't. Like, and on top of this, remember we said in the beginning that she was exploring her sexuality and she was rejected by her family when she came out to them as a lesbian.
Oh my gosh. That's the last thing that she needed.
Yeah. So she's getting all of this rejection from her mother, from her father, from her grandparents, and Amanda, because Amanda stopped talking to her, you know, around her birthday after she had said that she had feelings for her, and she's just getting blow after blow without any strategies or supports to express her anger and frustrations in a way that is healthy for her.
Yeah, it's a pent up, it's a popper waiting to pop.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. And that, you know, the self-harm never makes sense, but at the same time, she felt all of this. I can now understand why she felt the need to self-harm.
Mm-hmm.
Why she personally felt the need. You know, if she had had the help that she deserved, maybe she wouldn't have felt that way, and it would not have spiraled in the manner that it did.
Yeah. So I've given you all this information, and now I'm going to take us back to the trial. Okay. So Tia was very depressed and hated herself for what she had done to Amanda. And at some point while she was in jail awaiting trial, she even carved the words, "I'm sorry," into her arm.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So she doesn't have the proper outlets to really process all of these feelings that she's having.
But they took the insanity plea off the table. I'm not saying that she is insane because she knows exactly what she did wrong, but she carved into her arm. Y'all don't think that she needs to be at a psychiatric treatment
girl
facility?
And just wait, because this judge that I'm about to start talking about, he gets on my entire nerves. So the defense attorney and psychologist on the case stated that Tia was suicidal. She mutilates herself and she writes poems about how she longs for death. Okay. A part of a poem that she wrote said, "I see razor blades. I hear my pain screaming for help. If I kill myself, it will cancel all the pain I have done." Tia wow. clearly and obviously needed help. She is not okay mentally, which is why the defense put in a bid to have Tia transferred from jail to a psychiatric hospital. Because currently she's in jail, but because of her age, she's like in isolation. She's being kept from everybody else.
So that's only going to make it worse.
Yeah.
She's left alone with her thoughts all yeah. day long.
Mm-hmm. So forensic psychologist Trudy Block Garland told Circuit Judge John Murphy that Tia's emotional state would inevitably deteriorate if she remains confined and isolated at the North Broward Jail in Pompano Beach. Okay? So despite all of these efforts, everybody's coming to them like, look, she has X, Y, and Z. She's writing these poems. She clearly needs help. The judge was like, "I'm not comfortable moving her to a less secure setting due to the nature of the crime." And he refused to send her to Fort Lauderdale Hospital to be like, it's more of like a psychiatric hospital.
Yeah. It's not jail, but it's like they're still under surveillance and they're still checked on regularly by nurses and medicated, and like not medicated to that extent, but like medicated with the proper medication that she needs. Like clearly she is depressed.
Yes.
Like she needs these evaluations, and they have group therapy, and they have places like this that are just for teens.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what he was thinking, but it's a no-brainer to me that she didn't deserve to be in a holding cell because she was 15, 16 years old and couldn't be with 18-plus-year-olds. She needs to be with people that are like her.
Yeah.
That she can understand her brain and understand what she's going through and how to cope with it.
Yeah. But he did agree to order evaluations by a psychiatrist that are trained to deal with adolescents.
So she gets a visitor from a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
What, once a week?
It didn't say, but like in Tia's case, this wasn't nearly enough for what she had gone through. So much so that the forensic psychologist that I talked about earlier, Trudy, she believed that without a thorough psychiatric evaluation and subsequent treatment, sooner or later, she will find a way to die.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, she's proven that if she has a plan, She's going to get it. She's going to do it. And, you know, that goes back to the text messages. People didn't take her seriously, and she had a plan. They didn't know that her plan was real. They thought it was fake, but she had a plan. And the pain is going to get too much for Tia, and her guilt is going to overcome her. And that psychiatrist is right. She didn't need to be in jail. She needed to be under supervision. And I'm not defending Tia and her actions. I do feel bad for Tia, knowing everything that she went through, because no child deserves that. And I feel like Tia could have the chance of being reformed if given the right sentencing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The purpose of prison is to rehabilitate with the hopes that you will go back into society a better person. And I don't think they're setting her up for success to do this.
No.
Not at all. Like,
setting her up for failure.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I just want to be clear. I am in no way, shape, or form excusing Tia's behavior. What she did was wrong. What she did to Amanda's was wrong. What she did to Amanda's family was wrong. You can always choose to be a better person. But I just don't think that at the time, Tia wasn't strong enough to be a better person.
Mentally, no. She had things taking over her brain that she had no control over.
Uh-huh.
Just impulse control.
Mm-hmm. And that's the case of Tia Wimberly.
So her final sentencing was in a prison, not a psychiatric.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Do we have a status of her now? Because she is my age. Well, she's a year younger than me, so she's 28 right now.
I do not. I tried to look where she is now, and then all the same sources that I use for this case came up. I have no idea what she is doing. I have no idea how she is doing. I have no idea if she's getting the help that she needs. But the moral of the story is she needs the help. And yeah. I don't think that the help that this judge awarded her is enough. Just to have someone come, and mind you, this is back in what, she was sentenced in 2010?
Crime was in 2008.
Crime is in 2008. She was sentenced in 2010. It's 2022 now. How much work was really done to really rehabilitate her so when she does come out in those 25 years that she is ready to be out? You know what I mean?
In a normal prison setting, a woman's facility, a women's facility, she's not. She is probably solely surviving at this point. She's not in group therapy under medication that is monitored by doctors, where she can discuss this trauma. I would like to know how she's doing right now, or what she's doing, and like her. I would like to understand her state right now. I guess is the best thing.
Because it feels like it wasn't a very positive state at any. I mean, she realized what she had done, but then you're still writing these suicidal poems. You're still carving things into your arm. You're like, she needs help, and I really and truly hope that she's getting it. But we can't know for sure.
Yeah. No, we can't. And that's not going to be public knowledge unless something does happen. Well, I don't even know if that would be public knowledge, but
I don't know.
Yeah. That this is a case of childhood trauma unresolved.
Yeah. And I just, like, we've dealt with other cases that had childhood trauma before. We've been there. It's just, I don't know why, but this one hits a little different. This one. And I think it's just because she was so, like, she was immediately, like, remorseful. Immediate. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go out like Jasmine Richardson and Jeremy Stankey did and just ride around with my friends and, like, canoodle all over each other when we just murdered our family. You know what I mean?
Right, right. She was. I mean, she's the one that called 911, and she even pleaded, I don't want her to die. Please go to the high school.
Yeah.
I will say that I don't know the age of her grandparents, but I do feel like when you're in the care of your grandparents and you have I have a lot of students that are in the care of their grandparents, and I will say their grandparents are doing the best that they can do.
Yeah.
But you have to understand, those grandparents have already raised kids. This is their grandchild. Mm-hmm. That's not their responsibility.
Yeah.
They should be able to enjoy the title of grandmother and grandfather and spoil you and give you the candy that mom and dad said no to.
Yeah. And I will say something that really, like, kind of ticked me off when I was doing my research. And again, this is my opinion, like, whatever. But I was reading that at trial, Tia's grandfather said something along the lines of, is that I hope that she gets the help that we know she needs. But it's just like, if you knew she needed it, why didn't you give it to her?
Or why did you stop?
Like, I read that and was like, really, sir? That's what we're going to say?
Because it seems like, and I don't know that you, I don't know, I might have forgotten if you mentioned months, but if the murder happened in 2008 and she quit therapy in 2007, maximum, that's 1 year difference. And you could just see the downward spiral happening within 1 year.
And then in 2008, like, Amanda had cut her off entirely.
Yeah. So she needed to remain in therapy. That's not your decision to pull her out. That should be the therapist. That's what they're trained to do. And my biggest, I cannot say this enough to people, just in all professions, trust the people that are in the professions that they're in.
Oh,
trust
yeah.
them.
Oh, yeah.
They have degrees in what they're doing. They know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And you know, everyone's not a good seed. Everybody's not a good seed. There's some bad seeds sprinkled in there. But majority of the people who are in the field that they went to school for are in there for a reason, because it's something they're really passionate about, because it's something they truly want to do.
And you know that therapist, when they got the news that she wasn't coming back, they probably hung their head and was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
And a lot of therapists talk about the case that always stays with them.
Yeah.
You know? I commend a therapist, though. I don't think I could do it. There are some days that I don't think I can do what I do. But I do it.
Especially with going on year three in a pandemic. Like, yikes.
Well, that was the case of Tia.
It was. Everybody, go to therapy, please.
Go to therapy. The bell is officially dismissing you because you need to go to therapy. That is your next class.
Yes. Stay in school. Go to therapy. And be a good person.
Be kind.
Be safe. Be kind. Be helpful. Bye.
Bye.